I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove from the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Farewell, my own dear native land, for here I cannot stay. I am prepared to sail away, bound for America, to leave the land that gave my birth. It grieves my heart full sore. So fare thee well, dear Ireland, where the three-leaved shamrock grows.
Phil Campbell is a singer and songwriter from the border village of Beleek in Northern Ireland. Phil was visiting Lancaster to headline a Wood Stove House concert in late September 2010 while on a two-week U.S. tour. Phil's latest CD, Songbirds, released in 2005, is a complement to a six-part television series by the same name that celebrates the lives and songs of five women from different parts of Ireland who sang the songs that everyone knew in the early to mid-20th century. They became internationally famous and paved the way for many traditional Irish singers who followed. The series had a successful run on RTE TV, Ireland's Channel 1. Also joining me is Tom Knapp. Tom and I chatted with Phil about her life in music, the process of making the Songbirds project, and her time on the road as a touring musician. All of the music on today's show is from the Songbirds Project.
So fare thee well, dear Ireland, where the three-leaved shamrock grows.
Well, joining me in the Wood Stove House is Phil Campbell, all the way from Northern Ireland. And Phil is in Lancaster because she is headlining a Wood Stove House concert tonight. Also joining me in the Wood Stove House is Tom Knapp. Tom Knapp is my partner in Fire in the Glen, and Tom and I will be opening the show. So welcome to you both. Welcome, Phil, and welcome, Tom.
It's lovely to be here, Jason.
I want to start with some of your musical past. I know that you grew up in a musical household. What was it like being a kid in your village in Northern Ireland?
I kind of grew up right on the border, and there was music. My mother's from the south and my father's from the north, 3 miles apart. And my mother had my younger brother and myself. She used to teach us songs for family occasions, you know, and you were wheeled out as the precocious brat for every occasion, you know, granny's anniversary and auntie's birthday and stuff. And I think I started, you know, we were learning Irish dancing, and there was always something going on because, like, there was, you know, you're making your own entertainment, and a lot of sure. kids around me played music. And going back a bit further, my father was a lovely singer, and my mother as well, although they never really did much with it. But in my mother's family, she had cousins who had a Cayley band, and my father had a brother who came over here to New York, and he was active in the Fesh in New York and stuff. So there was a history of music in the family, you know. But then when I went on to school, I was sent to boarding school in Enniskillen and to the Nuns. And they had a concert for the first year boarders within the first 2 weeks that you were there, and if you showed any ability at all, you were handed instruments, you know. So I was given a harp to play, and learned piano and did singing lessons and dancing and stuff, you know.
So and guitar?
The guitar I didn't take up until a wee bit later. It was sort of one of those things. My singing teacher and the Nuns in general thought Mary O'Hara was wonderful, and me and a couple of other girls, they thought they were getting a few more Mary O'Haras. So we were taught the harp, and we'd be wheeled out for the German tourists when they were coming around. And then I was about 13 or 14, and I discovered, well, both Linda Ronstadt and Emmylou Harris, but slightly before that I found Donny Osmond and Michael Jackson, and that put paid to that. So and somebody showed me 3 chords on the guitar, and I thought I was made up, and that was it. I was ready to go out gigging, no bother.
As you said, you grew up in a very musical family. At what point did it sort of click for you that this was not just something you wanted to do at home, but this was something you wanted to do as a career?
I don't think I ever thought too much. When I was younger, when I was like, you know, 7, 8 years of it, I was convinced I was going to be Judy Garland. You know, it wasn't even that I was going to be like her. I had never dawned on me to figure out how you would do that, you know. And then I sort of fell into singing, and I was already playing in pubs and stuff when I was 16, 17. And it never occurred to me that I would do anything else. And it wasn't until I was finishing school at 17 that it became clear to me that my father and mother wanted me to go to university. And it was only at that point that I suddenly realised that maybe I wasn't going to be playing music rather than it being the other way around. Mm-hmm. And I think if I'd had free choice in it and been a wee bit more sussed, I probably wouldn't have gone away from home at that point and wouldn't have gone to uni, you know.
What about your professional musical life? How long have you been a professional musician?
Well, I sort of started semi-pro, if you want, when I was about 16 and doing a lot of concerts. I was very fortunate. Our youth club was run by a priest who was involved in the peace movement, and I got to play with a lot of the show bands and just as a singer, you know, with the guitar. And then all through university, I went to Belfast, to Queen's University, and I had a folk band there and I was gigging fairly regularly. I sort of stopped for a while in my 20s. A boyfriend didn't particularly want me to be out playing and I was madly in love for about 6 months until I wised up. And so I've kind of always been dabbling at it. And while after that, I sort of didn't sing full time. I got involved in the other side of music, you know, kind of promoting bands and doing publicity and doing radio. And
right, you were with the BBC for a little while.
I was for about 7 years as a part timer.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've kind of been one of these, you know, always not quite known where I was going with anything and just doing whatever came up.
October winds lament around the castle of Dromore, yet peace is in her lofty halls, a Faustia Fiagastor. The wanton may droop and die, a bud of spring are you, singing hush-a-bye lulo lulo lan, sing hush-a-bye lulo lan. Bring no ill winds to him, babe and me, dread spirit of black water banks, Clan Owen's wild banshee, and Holy Mary pitying us in heaven for grace doth sue. By Lou, 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 Lan, sing hush by Lou, Lou, Lan.
Well, in 2005, you released the most recent CD, and it turned out to be a pretty big project called Songbirds.
Yeah, it was really interesting how that happened. 2 years earlier, I'd been writing for 3-4 years, and I did an album of my own, mostly my own songs, called Beneath the Calm. Mm-hmm. And I came over to the Folk Alliance conference here to NERFA up in upstate New York as a songwriter, not realizing that there was another 750 songwriters there, you know.
Right.
And at the sessions, everybody wanted an Irish songs, and I didn't have an Irish album, so I went home to with the idea that I would do an album of Irish songs and then get back to my writing. And when I had completed the album, I had decided to do a lot of songs that I'd learned as a child. Somebody pointed out that a lot of them had been recorded by this woman, Delia Murphy, and that it might make an interesting television thing. So we went to RTE and they liked the idea and said, would you, you know, we would love to do something about Delia Murphy, but would you pick other women as well? And so what started out to be, you know, an album that should have been done and dusted in 2 or 3 months, here I am 5 years later still with it.
Still promoting that
record.
And
it's been an amazing journey. It's been very interesting.
How did that project then come about? You say we. Who was involved with it, and did you were you really the direction behind it, where it went creatively?
Well, it was sort of my husband's a percussionist and a sound engineer, and Tom McFarlane's his name, and the two of us had kind of talked up this idea, you know, that you could do, and what about, and then we met a man who had directed a couple of small programs for television, and we got chatting and he liked the idea, so it was just the three of us, and it had no more direction than that, Jason. It was so, it took us by surprise, because we almost started filming without any planning or pre-production or anything. I just thought, you know, well, how will we go about this? Oh yeah, we should interview da-da-da-da. And there happened to be a woman who was Delia Murphy's granddaughter, was right. home from Australia on a fly-in visit to Dublin, and we only had 2 days to get her. So that was when we filmed the first interview, you know. And it just carried on its own, and we were about 6 months into it in 2005, when Tom and I both sort of got a major panic attack and thought, oh, how is this ever going to happen? You know, what have we done? And it was too late to go back, you know. If I were king of Erin's Isle, and all things at my will, I'd roam through all creation, new comforts to find still. And the comfort I would seek the most, as you will understand, is to win the heart of Martha, the flower of sweet Strabane.
Tell us the names of the five women that are profiled.
Okay. Well, the first one is Delia Murphy, and she was the first person in Ireland to be recorded singing in her own accent, which really makes her the mother of Irish music, of folk music, as we know it. Then, so what we decided to do was pick others who had sung similar songs. So we looked at Mary O'Hara, and she was a classical singer and played the harp and sang more of what she calls the art songs, like Carrick Fergus, My Lag in Love, a very high stylized voice. Mm-hmm. Then there was Margaret Barry, a street singer, a tinker, and wonderful, wonderful lady. She kind of was a busker and was discovered by people like Alan Lomax. Then Bridie Gallagher. She was sort of the beginnings of Irish country music. And people like Daniel O'Donnell have followed on from her. And again, it was the same catalogue. Mm-hmm. And just from a more Camellia side. And the last one was a girl called Ruby Murray, who wouldn't really be that well known here. She was a pop singer and from Belfast. And she held the record of having the most songs in the hit parade at the same time. She had 5 songs in the hit parade in 1 week in 1955, and it was never equaled. Like Elvis, the Beatles, nobody managed to surpass it until Michael Jackson died last year. It was just crazy. We kind of thought we were sure, because the way the charts have changed, we were all sure that she would hold the record forever, you know. But and what I find fascinating about her was, you know yourself with traditional Irish music, it's considered more of a Catholic thing, you know, mm-hmm. and particularly in the north of Ireland. Ruby came from the Shankill Road, which is the Protestant area of Belfast, and she sang all the same songs, and these were kind of slightly less than Shannos traditional songs. And in England, she was known as the voice of Ireland. So those were the five, and we started then trying to find songs that would match up with more, you know. What I tried to do was keep it that it was about the songs first and foremost, because they were a part of music history mm-hmm. that had kind of been left by the wayside and rediscovering traditional music, you know.
I watched the DVD recently, and it's really neat how you sort of intersperse some footage of these women, you performing some of these songs in a recording mm-hmm. studio, and then interviews with other folks who are, you know, Irish musicians, and to get their opinion and their take, and including family members.
Yes, folks.
Were you conducting those interviews? Or
I went to all of the interviews because I wanted to. I kind of had the story in my head. I was learning as I went along how the idea of a storyboard for a television story went, you know. But I kind of had done the research myself into the women, and in talking to each interviewee, it was putting the story together more for me as well.
Yeah.
So and I loved that part of it. I found it so interesting, the research, you know.
She
Cupid sails in half an hour to cross the broad Atlantic. My friends are standing on the shore with grief and sorrow frantic. My trunks are all stowed down below in the great ship Dan O'Leary. The anchor's weighed and the gangway's up and I'm leaving Tipperary. I said goodbye Mick, goodbye Pat, goodbye Kate and Mary. The anchor's weighed and the gangway's up and I'm leaving Tipperary. There's a steamer blazing up, I can no longer stay. I'm bound for New York City, boys, 3,000 miles away.
I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. My guest is Phil Campbell, an international touring singer and songwriter from the border village of Beleek in Northern Ireland. Joining the conversation is Tom Knapp, my partner in the traditional Celtic duo Fire in the Glen.
When you're talking about pulling music from a tradition, not the music you're writing yourself, it can almost be harder to make the selection. You have so much music to pull from. When you're looking for music to highlight, what goes into that selection process for you?
It's got to. It's the same as trying to find songs from another songwriter. It's got to. There's got to be nothing in the song that jars with me. The story's either got to appeal to me in that it means something really strong, or that I just fall in love with the melody or something. But the words are really the most important thing for me. And now when I'm doing so many gigs with the songbird stuff, I'm finding I'm looking for variety and looking for fun. So many of the songs are just good fun, and I've always found it difficult to sing, you know, more than two or three very sad songs at a time, because I find it hard to lift my mood. And these songs are such a joy because so many of them are upbeat and happy songs, you know, and a bit tongue in cheek. And but I've been listening to an awful lot of Shano's stuff on this trip, Paddy Tunney and Rosie Stewart and people like that. And if a story really moves me, then you're able to sing it for a long time, you know. And I think I find when I'll put in songs and maybe they'll not last for very long, but there'll be others that I'll end up singing for the next 20 years just because they're still such a good story, you know.
Just one other question. I know a lot of the focus right now is on this traditional material that you've been highlighting, but asking for a moment about your own material, what inspires you to write? What is it that triggers this needs to be not just, you know, a memory or whatever, but a lyric?
That's a really good question. I honestly don't know. I think if there's a line that sits, that, you know, I think it's probably to do with an emotion on the day. Really, any of the songs that have stayed with me, it's something that has sparked an emotion there and then, and the line has come with it. The line and the melody have come at more or less at the same time. If I'm very disciplined, I can make myself write when I sit down, and then it's just whatever comes into my head and see if there's a strong enough feeling with it. I haven't written an awful lot of stuff in my life, and it wouldn't be something that I've written nothing since I've started on Songbirds, which I want to change that now. I kind of got so absorbed in this, I find it really hard to pull myself out of it. And I ended up starting to look at much more traditional material rather than contemporary. And it's only in the last 3-4 months that I've started getting back to listening to other songwriters. And now I very much want to take a bit of time to do some writing this winter.
Do you think your involvement with Songbirds will change the way you write?
I think so. Yeah. And it's actually seeing people's reactions to the songs, because we have done quite a lot of, we being Tom and a mandolin player I work with called Brendan Emmett, we've done quite a lot of Irish centres in England, and I've done quite a lot of Irish centres here, or where there's, you know, kind of Irish emigrants coming to the gigs, and they stir such an emotion. And it was, you can't understand the idea of being an emigrant until you actually come into a community of emigrants, you know. I think it definitely will. And also the whole folky idea of what I was writing before was slightly more poppy.
I've been a moonshiner for many a year. I spent all my money whiskey and beer. I'll go to some hollow and I'll set up my still, and I'll make you a gallon for a $2 bill. I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a long don't like me, well, leave me alone. I'll eat when I'm hungry and I'll drink when I'm dry. And if moonshine don't kill me, I'll live till I die.
Let's shift gears a little bit to the live show. Mm-hmm. You're joining us tonight because you're headlining a Woodstove House concert.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
And this is part of a 2-week tour of the northeastern part of the United States. Mm-hmm. How often are you touring, and where are the places that you visit most often?
This is actually my fourth visit to the States, apart from that music conference I mentioned. Tom and I came twice about 7-8 years ago to the West Coast, first of all, which I just loved. California was great, but I've been told it's not really America. But then we kind of took a gap and came back last year to Bethlehem, and now I'm back again this year to the Celtic Fest in Bethlehem. So I'm kind of hoping that I would like to be coming a couple of times a year now for the next few years, if I can make that work.
Where else do you find yourself touring in the world?
Do Germany a couple of times a year. I'm going to Holland next month when I go home. I would go over to Scotland and England. And interestingly, with Songbirds, I've been doing a lot more at home. I'm doing theatres at home, and which is really, really good, because beforehand with my own material, it was mainly folk clubs in England and Scotland and stuff, you know. Germany's brilliant for both folk clubs and for Irish music, and they really like what we do. And
so has the show really shifted as far as instruments that you're using, and how has the live show changed before Songbirds and then after?
Well,
Songbirds?
Beforehand it was more just rhythm guitar and percussion, and now what we've kind of done is just shifted it slightly, that it's more vocal based and with mandolin and guitar added into it. Mm-hmm. And it's always been, you know, kind of that it's something about songs, and occasionally at home, if I get the opportunity, I'll bring in a couple of more players. Like I'm working on a show with a string quartet and piper for next summer, which will take some of the slightly more classical Songbird songs and add to them. And there's this beautiful quintet at home, which is a sort of a string quartet and Ilan pipes, and so we're going to do an 8-piece, which will be very nice for some festivals. And ideally I would love to have a fiddle player and another guitarist in the band, but then, you know, needs must. It's sort of, you have to keep it as compact as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I think really for the foreseeable future, when I'm here, I'll probably do solo gigs or at you know, or do them with Tom,
with
a little bit of percussion, because these songs stand up quite well on their own, as long as you have an audience that'll sing with you or engage in the stories, you know.
Any interesting moments on this particular tour that stand out?
The most interesting thing is the driving. No, it's been lovely. I've been from Portland in Maine down as far as Lynchburg in Virginia, and I've been as far west as Pittsburgh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Covered a lot of territory in a week and a half, 2 weeks.
An awful lot. I've seen every tree in the country, and they're all nearly ready to turn red. I suppose they've all been interesting in their own way, but the one over in Pittsburgh was very interesting. It was at the Carlow University, which is a university that was built for women students by Mercy nuns from Ireland, and I'd gone to a Mercy convent. And
oh, nice.
So it was a really interesting stop off, you know.
As I went walking one fine summer's morning, the birds on the branches, they sweetly did sing. The lads and the lasses together were sporting, going down to the factory, there were begin. I spied one amongst them, more fairer than Venus, her cheeks like the roses that grow in yon dell, her skin like the lily that grows in yon valley, She's my one only goddess, my sweet factory girl.
Why do you think the Irish music, I mean, you're talking about all these places that you've been, not only in the States, but in Europe. Why does Irish music find such a large audience? It seems to be able to touch people no matter what their culture is.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? I think in Germany, initially, it was that thing of a spark of freedom. And there were so many German pubs. And I suppose that was the first European stop for a lot of musicians. I think the other thing was that America in particular and England was responsible for preserving the tradition, you know. And people brought this great music with them in the late 1800s and earlier than that, and then slightly changed it. And we've been so heavily influenced by the music from America, you know, bluegrass, Appalachian, country music, like Ireland's like the 53rd state of the US, you know. And it's and I suppose when you hear, like, it's still to this day when I hear a really good trad band playing and hear the pipes getting wound up, and you know, it just stirs something, and it's a lift. It's not sad music. Tommy Sands is a neighbour of mine and a good friend, and Tommy has a great saying that sad music is not for making you sad, it's for taking the sadness out of you. And I think Irish music did that. It took the sadness out of people, you know. And when they, I found it strange when I first came here to find how Irish communities sort of, they didn't move to America, they moved to Ireland, America. And they just brought their whole everything with them and kept it there and didn't go outside of that. But it's just, and then on the West Coast, I find it really interesting meeting all these young women who are in, you know, following the Wiccan religion, and they see Ireland as the motherland. And I've learned more about Ireland by traveling than about Irish music, you know. Yeah. We're so lucky to have it, and I'm very lucky to have had all these singers going before me to allow me to come.
Sure.
You know, because I'm not sure that I'd be a great trailblazer, but it's great following along after them, you know.
So I always ask when I have a musical guest, actually any guest, for a handful of Desert Island Discs, just a couple of records that you would take with you if you knew you were going to be stranded on a desert island.
Ooh. Oh, I hate that. Right, it would be very varied. And it would change probably every week. At the minute, because of what I've been listening to, I would take Frank Hart with me, the traditional singer, and I would take the Bothy Band. Ella Fitzgerald sort of just blows me away, and I've always been a huge Judy Garland fan. And I love, Linda Ronstadt has been a long time hero of mine, and I have really started to get interested in Texas swing.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Really, that's a pretty big suitcase.
A wide range of stuff. You know? Yeah. I'd find it very hard to just pick something, you know.
Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight and for being here to do this concert. We've been looking forward to this for months.
Thank you so much, Jason. Thanks, Tom. It's been lovely.
All right. Thanks.
Phil Campbell is an international touring singer and songwriter from the village of Beleek in Northern Ireland. To learn more about Phil Campbell, visit her online at philcampbell.com. That's FILCAMPBELL. Around the Wood Stove is a production of the Wood Stove House. Find us on the web at woodstovehouse.com.
You know, it's so sad, that loneliness of it, you know.